San Diego Comic-Con is the biggest pop culture and media party of the year. So what better place to celebrate Sherlock Holmes than there? Sherlock CC returns to San Diego Comic-Con Friday, July 10th from 7 to 10 p.m. on the top of the San Diego Central Library. Get your tickets at sherlockcc2015.bpt.me or find more details at sherlockccparty.tumblr.com.
As the world's biggest classical music festival, the BBC Proms offers 8 weeks of world-class music making from a vast array of leading orchestras, conductors, and soloists from the UK and around the world. On Sunday, August 16th, BBC Proms will present Sherlock Holmes, A Musical Mind, featuring music from The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes to David Arnold and Michael Price's music from BBC's Sherlock. Special guests include Sherlock co-creator Mark Gatiss, as well as mezzo-soprano Christine Rice, who explores the repertoire of adventurous and opera singer Irene Adler. Tickets for Sherlock Holmes and Musical Mind go on sale Saturday, May 16th, and there will be an additional 1,000 standing tickets, aka proming passes, available on the day of the concert. Full details can be found at bbc.co.uk/proms.
Wessex Press, an imprint of Gasogene Books, is a premier publisher of books about Sherlock Holmes and his world. They are also our publishers. The One Fixed Point in a Changing Age, A New Generation on Sherlock Holmes, is a collection of essays written by online fans. It was edited by several of the Baker Street Babes and contains a foreword by Laurie R. King, the author of the Mary Russell series. If you'd like to know more about Wessex Press or our publication, please go to www.wessexpress.com.
The Baker Street Journal is a leading Sherlockian publication, with features written by the readers for the readers. It contains both academic articles and light, fun reading for any sort of Sherlock Holmes enthusiast. If you're a fan of The Great Detective, The Good Doctor, and the other works of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and you'd like to know more about the journal, how to subscribe, or how to offer your own services at writing an article, their website is www.bakerstreetjournal.com.
Oh, they call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. Oh, so when Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your. Quotidian world has got you crying. Won't you two-two-one mine?
We are so excited to welcome Elementary showrunner Robert Doherty to the Baker Street Babes today. Rob is the creator, executive producer, and writer of the show. He has serious nerd television credentials before Elementary 2. He previously wrote on Star Trek Voyager and Dark Angel. The show has been nominated for 2 Primetime Emmy Awards and features the tremendously gifted Johnny Lee Miller as Sherlock Holmes and the incredibly talented Lucy Liu as Joan Watson. The third season is about to wrap up on May 14th, and we obviously hope you'll all tune in. Thank you so much for joining us today, Rob.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we would love to induct you as an honorary member of the Baker Street Babes. But in order to do that, we must ask you some questions about your Sherlock Holmes experiences to make it official. So The first question is, how did you first encounter Sherlock Holmes?
What I want to say is Hound of the Baskervilles was on a summer reading list, I believe, when I was in fifth grade. And it sounded more interesting than anything else on the list. And so, if memory serves, I read it that summer. But I want to say around the same time, Sherlock Holmes appeared in a Batman comic. I was, and still am, a big comic book reader. And so, again, I can't remember exactly which came first. They were around the same time. I probably enjoyed the Batman version a little more at the time. But I think Hound of the Baskervilles was a little over my head. So,
Hound of the Baskervilles is still over my head in some ways.
Yes, it was definitely. I don't think fifth grade is a good time to dive in. I had a better time reading Sherlock Holmes when I was in high school.
Fifth grade's a little young for Baskervilles, I would say.
Looking back, I don't understand why they didn't start with A Study in Scarlet. I'm a completist. I hate reading or seeing things out of order. So anyway.
That is a nerd quality to its yes. core, is having to have the completist.
Okay. I have to say I love that you mentioned the Batman comic. I remember a Superman comic where Superman somehow wishes Sherlock Holmes into existence in the comic. I'm a fan of that one. So our second question is, who is your favorite character in Sherlock Holmes?
Hold on to your hats. It's probably Sherlock Holmes. I wish I had a more interesting answer. But obviously if you are a fan of the stories and the books, you spend the bulk of your time with Holmes and Watson. I love them both dearly. And I should clarify that on Elementary, I have no favorites. I love our Holmes and our Watson, quite equally. But, as far as reading the books, I was certainly more fascinated by Holmes, which, like I said, is probably not a shocking answer. I love Watson. I love the way Conan Doyle, used Watson as a POV character. Someone, he was the lens for us to look through and enjoy Holmes. But there were times he came off as a fanboy, sort of like the biggest Sherlock Holmes fan in the world happened to become a Sherlock Holmes roommate. I don't really hold that against him. It's just one of the reasons I happen to enjoy Sherlock a little bit more.
I completely understand. Favorite story?
Probably, and again, I don't know if you guys qualify between stories or books. I tend to call the longer pieces books, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, we do too.
Okay, all right. Study in Scarlet would be my favorite longer piece. And I gotta say, this is a more recent addition to my list of favorites, but The Illustrious Client, especially in season 3, the Illustrious Client was very good to Elementary.
The last question of this honorary induction, I'll yes. let Amy take it.
Okay. It is a question. You are allowed to pick your own. The question is, what is your favorite adaptation?
Man, that's a tough one. I enjoyed the Granada series when I was much younger. It used to run on PBS where I grew up in White Plains. So I would catch the odd episode here and there. For having worked at Star Trek, I don't think this counts as an adaptation, but I loved seeing Jean-Luc Picard don the Deerstalker and play Sherlock Holmes on the holodeck.
Oh no, we count that. There's enough people that have been on the show and that are in the Babes who also love that moment in history. So we
oh yes.
yeah, Patrick Stewart is a pretty solid Holmes. And it's funny. It's less fun, but I really enjoyed the 7% solution. I never actually read the book, but I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that movie a lot.
I know you are probably one of the busiest men ever right now, but you should pick it up because it's a great read too.
It is. It's fabulous.
I will do that.
Well, so Rob, we want to welcome you to the Baker Street Babes. You are now officially an honorary member of a very elite club of people who love Sherlock Holmes way too much. So welcome to the club.
I'm honored. Thank you.
So at this point, we would love to transition and talk a little bit more specifically about Elementary.
Sure.
First of all, obviously, Sherlock Holmes is having a major moment culturally and even worldwide right now. What originally stoked your personal interest in making a Holmes adaptation?
Gosh, I will begin at the beginning. I didn't start from Sherlock Holmes. I started from wanting to develop with my dear friend and fellow EP on the show, Carl Beverly. Carl was someone I had gotten to know. He and his partner Sarah produced Justified has just wrapped its run.
Great show.
Love it. Could not love Justified more. And I miss it already. But, you know, I had met with Carl a few times. You know, we definitely clicked. We had a lot of the same tastes and sensibilities, and it made sense to try to develop something together. And so we'd been meeting off and on and trading ideas and just looking for something to do. And as we were wrapping up one of these meetings, I think I was literally headed for the door, and Carl said, "Oh, you know, by the way, Sherlock Holmes in New York. What do you think? How about that?" I said, "What do you mean?" And Carl had said he'd been thinking about, I think initially what Carl liked about the idea of Sherlock in New York was just sort of Sherlock as fish out of water, you know, putting him someplace other than London. And at first it sounded crazy to me, just because I think by then the first Robert Downey Jr. movie had come out. The first series of the BBC show had run. So, you know, if anything, it certainly, if he's having a moment now, he was having maybe even an even bigger one 3 years ago. So it sounded a little crazy, but Carl was excited and got me thinking about it. And I went home and I started to just kind of think and chew on everything. And, because it's Sherlock Holmes, and because you know, historically he's been through so many hands and so many iterations, you really do have to take your time and make sure you're not just doing the same thing again. I've said to people since that it never would have occurred to me, even though I adore the character and I love Conan Doyle, it never would have occurred to me to try to write the character. I can't speak for everyone who's actually done it, but you know, my first thought was, who am I to write Sherlock Holmes? So I don't think if Carl had said it, I ever would have taken a shot, but it was, it stayed in my head. I started to get excited about it. You know, and as you can tell by now, The take that I had was the idea of a broken Sherlock Holmes in repair. So that's really how it started. Again, it was Carl got the ball rolling and got me thinking about it. And once I had that sort of that notion of, you know, this is our Sherlock will not be the Sherlock everyone has seen before. Our Sherlock will be the guy who went down, you know, a rabbit hole and is now trying to crawl back out. And that's really how it started.
Well, we love Johnny. I shouldn't speak for everyone. I love Johnny Lee Miller as your particular Sherlock Holmes. I think he's brought a resonance and a life to that rebuilding of Sherlock that is quite, I don't think it gets enough attention personally.
I agree. He's amazing. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen, I don't know if you've ever seen an Elementary script. Johnny has some of the thickest dialogue I've ever, certainly the thickest dialogue I've ever written, but sometimes it's the thickest I've ever seen. You know, what he does with it, his ability to not just memorize all this stuff, but give incredibly nuanced performances, I'm certainly biased, but yeah, I agree. I wish more people were taking notice.
Well, we've certainly taken notice, and I think another person on the show that we've taken notice of is Lucy Liu. She is, her role as Joan Watson is probably one of the hallmarks of your show, and through history of the adaptations, your show will probably actually be remembered as the show that turned John Watson into Joan Watson. Tell us about that decision to turn John into Joan and how you feel about being remembered for that decision.
Wow. Some of your diehards may have heard this, this story before, but I will regale you anyway. When I was really diving into the development process, you know, once I had talked to Carl and was trying to get my take nailed down, I came across a handful of write-ups, I guess you'd call it, assessments, psychological or psychiatric assessments of the character Sherlock Holmes. And I thought it was very cool. It reminded me of, you know, my Star Trek days, you know, people were so passionate about Star Trek, you would find, you know, the same kind of, I don't even know what you would call a document like that, but I mean, it's certainly how the Klingon dictionary happened. Someone took the time to craft an entire language and then a dictionary for the Klingon race. So somewhere out there were psychiatrists and psychologists who took the time to write up some assessments. One of the things that I remember recurring was this idea that he had an aversion to women, which I confess, I never really picked up on it. I think that's probably because some of what I read, I was a little too young to kind of pick up on things like that. Now as an adult, anytime I dive back in and look for that side of him, yeah, it's there. He seems to be a little prickly about the fairer sex. And somewhat, again, I don't know who wrote it up, but I remember the term gynophobe coming up. And that's, it sort of stuck with me. I guess like when I just remember thinking like, oh, well then Watson should be a woman. This is before I had any sort of story, before I had real details. It was just me telling myself a joke in my head, you know, like, well, if our Holmes was like that, then we should take this rock he has in a male Watson and make John a Joan. And I didn't take it very seriously. That was one, you know, one sort of stray thought during a day of, you know, researching and rereading stories and all of that. But I wrote it down somewhere. And then as the days went on, I just kept coming back to it. I started to like it more and more. You know, and I think the first time I talked to Carl, I was just saying the great thing about it is you potentially raise the expectation that it'll change everything when in fact it shouldn't change anything. That'll be a, you know, it would become for me a challenge of the show that I would look forward to. You know, I think typically when you have a male lead and a female lead in this kind of show, there's this sense of inevitability that they'll, you know, they will eventually tumble into bed together. And I don't want to do that. I did then. I don't want to do it now. But I like the tension that it would create. I certainly don't want to bother anyone. I know some people get annoyed because they're desperate for that to happen. But
can we just like publicly congratulate you and thank you for putting that kind of relationship out there.
Yes,
because it's so important for people to understand that female characters don't have to be love interests. You know, that's not the only purpose that women serve in a man's world, you know, so to speak.
That's one of our favorite things, I would say, across the Baker Street Babes about the show is what an amazingly well-rounded character she is, and that she isn't necessarily having to be used in that way all the time.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I look forward to, over at least, you know, back then I was just looking at, you know, if I get one season, this is what I'll look forward to, but it's something we've been able to do all 3 years. It's just building a bond and a partnership as strong as any partnership he could have had with a male Watson. You know, they're friends. That's just how it is. They're partners, they're friends, they love each other, but they are not romantic interests for one another.
So obviously kind of jumping off that, interesting you saying, you know, you wanted to definitely maintain that dynamic that we see in the original stories, but obviously with a female character. Since the first episode, we've seen so many nods to the Sherlock Holmes canon of stories, just little touches here and there, all the way up to the, you know, bigger story themes. What is your approach in the writer's room to weaving the canon into Elementary episodes?
Gosh, we treat the canon like a treasure trove. It's something we can dive into as needed. sometimes what's needed is inspiration, and you certainly get that. You know, I mean, there've been plenty of times where I'm feeling kind of worn out. I can just sort of pick up a book or a story that I have or have not read before, and it can recharge you. It doesn't mean you dive in because you're trying to figure out how to make it an episode. With us, I think more often than not, we find either characters that work, you know, or characters that we think are appropriate to Elementary, or characters we just can't wait to get our hands on. I guess like twists or clues or just by way of example, and forgive me, I get my titles mixed up sometimes, but I believe it's Thor Bridge. A character tries to frame someone for murder, but I feel so silly saying any of this to you guys because you know all the stories. I'll give you the quick version. We took a piece of Thor Bridge that worked for us, and it became a teaser of an episode. There's a woman who wants to frame a man that she believes killed her sister, and she ties a heavy object to a gun. She kills herself. I left out the most important part. The rock, of course, is dangling over a bridge. She shoots herself, and the rock pulls the gun free from her hand, tumbles into the water, and it's a frame-up. It's a very successful frame-up. For us, we can't really make a 60-page script out of that, but we can make a great teaser. You know, it was. And it did. I mean, it's one of my favorite Elementary teasers, in that it's more than just a nod to Conan Doyle. It was his idea. But it launches us into our own story, which I also liked a lot. So, you know, here and there we will look for those little nuggets, those little pieces. And in the first season we did a similar kind of story, about Milverton, the blackmailer. We took pieces of the story that we thought were really intriguing and interesting. And that would be, again, not just appropriate to the show, but appropriate to a 1-hour procedural that airs on CBS. But then we build our own story around those details. You know, it's like I said, we're so lucky to have it. We're so lucky to have, the blessings of the estate to use the canon. It's tough. I haven't been keeping score. I'd say we probably have taken more characters than we have beats from the stories, and they always have a much, you know, for obvious reasons, they have a more seismic impact on the show because more often than not they connect back to Sherlock.
Well, that actually leads us perfectly into what I wanted to talk about next was basically. I'm going to just go ahead. I would love to be able to speak for all of the Baker Street Babes, but I'm just going to go ahead and speak for myself. I loved Kitty Winter. I loved that she was this obscure character that really, I mean, unless you're really a canonical person, you have Kitty Winter just seems like a great name anyway, right? I just want to take this opportunity because these opportunities don't come very often in life to let you know that when we talked about Kitty Winter on our website and publicly, we talked about Kitty Winter's arc in Elementary as being a masterclass in character development.
Wow.
We loved her. And so I would be curious to know, how did you decide on Kitty Winter as a character to develop from canon? And what themes or qualities did you sort of take from the short story, which didn't really give you much to work with, to help bring her to life?
Wow, that's what a fun question. I mentioned The Illustrious Client earlier. That was one of the stories that I just read a long time ago and had a hazy recollection of it. It wasn't something that I had read in the first two seasons of the show. There were two writers on staff who had approached me separately about, take a look there, you know, Adelbert Gruner is in it. Conan Doyle, he is likened to Moriarty. He could be a great villain for season 3. And sorry, if I haven't, I've already forgotten if I mentioned those two writers, Jeff King and Bob Goodman, who have been around almost from the beginning. Jeff was, and Bob came on in the second season. But I digress. And I did. I picked up the book to read it and just sort of like refamiliarize myself with Gruner. And what jumped out at me was Kitty. Kitty jumped out in that she was this complicated and remarkably proactive female character. You just don't tend to see that a lot in the canon. It jumped out at me that in the end she saves Sherlock Holmes and exacts some vengeance. And around the same time, maybe I should have said this first, but I had already decided that at the end of the season I wanted Sherlock and Joan to go their separate ways. We were closing in on that. And I didn't really have any sense of what we would do in three, but I knew that I wanted Sherlock to return with a new protege, just because it would create a lot of tension on multiple fronts. So I knew I wanted him to come back with someone, but I didn't have any kind of take on who that person was. And the truth is, I thought that would be a character that it would not be someone from the canon. It would be someone that we feel we could get the most out of, somebody we would create. And I guess just it was just great timing. I think I was out of town. I have all of the books and stories on my iPad, and I settled in to finally reread The Illustrious Client. And again, Kitty Winter jumped out at me in general, but more specifically, I thought she could be a great new partner. She could fit the bill for the person Sherlock returns with. And from there, like I said, the initially it was a matter of looking to The Illustrious Client to see if we could get something out of Gruner. But the funny thing was, again, Kitty just jumped out at me. And like you said, it was tricky because there's a lot there about her and yet very little. I know that her history or her backstory is very open to interpretation. I read a few different takes on the character. What we thought was most appropriate to us was someone with a dark history, someone that Sherlock could relate to, someone that Sherlock wants to teach and train and sort of help out of the gutter, because someone did all of that for him. You asked me a couple of. I think now I may have wandered away from your second question about.
Well, no, it's just I think it's actually perfect, because what we wanted to talk about next was sort of how her relationship with Joan and how it had a little bit of a. I don't want to say that there was a negative tension there, but there certainly was when they were definitely going to brawl on the street. But there was a growth. Right. There was a growth there, and there was a relationship there that was really important. And I think in the context of Joan has a really rough season in season three. Her boyfriend's murdered. She sort of feels replaced by Kitty. She tries to get a normal job, and Gruner is clearly behind it. And ultimately, it sort of comes full circle with her moving back into the brownstone. And I'm sort of curious how you saw that relationship with her, between her and Kitty, either contributing to any of that, or if they were just sort of, two women that you wanted to sort of interplay with each other as Sherlock, with Sherlock being this central theme in their life.
Wow, good questions. Let me back up. Like I was saying, the plan at the end of season two was for Sherlock to leave for a pretty extended stretch of time. And so basically that meant for me and the other writers, the business of the first half of season three was bringing Sherlock and Joan back together, because that's kind of how the show works. And I saw, you know, beyond liking Kitty as a character, beyond her canonical significance, I liked the idea of Sherlock and Joan having to co-parent her. She was a responsibility that they could share, and in sharing that responsibility, come back together. So I certainly wanted, you know, obviously Sherlock is the one who found her and began this, you know, this process of teaching and healing. But he's incomplete without Joan. He's in, you know, as I think any Sherlock would be incomplete without his Watson. And I could see a very natural progression that yes, you're right. Things did not start off well between Kitty and Joan, but that's what makes it so much fun. I knew that as we and the audience got to know Kitty better, Joan would start to see what Sherlock saw, and Joan could help teach her. You know. It's funny. I think in the very beginning, I worried about in the room. I would often make that parenting analogy, but I never thought I would say it out loud. Just because you don't want Johnny and Lucy to take offense to the idea that they're parenting someone in their 20s. But eventually, I did. I can't remember. We did put that in a script. I think like Sherlock just says it bluntly because it was a funny way of putting it, but it was also very true. So, so again, I guess I never quite, you know, I never looked at the opportunity here to, you know, to create this relationship with Joan. It was really about creating this very strange nuclear family. It was about what can she get from Sherlock Holmes and what can she get from Joan Watson. And that kind of Sherlock's life, Kitty perhaps makes different decisions before she leaves.
I could talk about Kitty all day, and it's really hard because I don't want
to. What was that?
I said I could talk about Kitty all day, and it's really hard because I don't want to take up your entire day. But just really quickly, you know, one of the things that we talked a lot about as a group was Kitty saves Sherlock just as much as Sherlock saves Kitty. They really do have to save each other. Do you feel like that's true? Is that a true assessment of their relationship?
Yes, absolutely. And that's what we wanted to get to as her arc wrapped up, just to show that, you know, this was not a one-sided affair and that he got a lot out of that partnership too.
Are any good things going to happen for Joan in season four? Are things going to turn around for her?
That wouldn't be any fun. you know, yes, I think things will get better so that I can make things worse again. you know how it is. We don't have any, don't tell CBS. We don't have any, you know, firm plans yet. You know, we're starting to kick around some ideas. The staff is on a brief break at the moment. If I may, I'll tease something in the finale. Something you'll see in the finale that will. How do I tease it? I'm terrible at that. By the end of the finale, you'll see that we have, you know, some of our work will be cut out for us. Like you'll have a strong sense of what the business of the top of season four needs to be. We'll also have someone joining the show for a while, the same way Kitty did. We'll have a new character with us for a while. Not necessarily a permanent addition to the cast, but. Perhaps create some new kinds of friction for Sherlock and Joan.
All right. Well, we'll patiently await.
Yeah. It won't take long. It's amazing. we're cutting it. We're still editing it, and I can't believe it, but it's going to air next Thursday. At this point in the season, your window gets so narrow, just as far as like how quickly it's written, shot, cut, and then it airs. I'm kind of marveling that it's actually a week from this Thursday.
Before I get to a more general question, if it's okay with Liz, I want to go ahead and slot in a question that we had from our listeners. And a couple of people asked kind of a similar question, which is a lot of people seem to identify with your version of Sherlock Holmes as being possibly on the autism spectrum, or at least displaying some behaviors that might be identified in that way. And I know that's brought some interest and even some hope to a lot of people seeing that.
Let me just start from the truth. As I settled in to develop this character, this Sherlock Holmes, that wasn't really on my it wasn't in the plans. It wasn't something I was looking to bake into the cake. Because as I mentioned earlier, what I was really starting from was the idea of an addict, someone who has spiraled out of control and is trying to get better, but is too proud to accept help, at least in the beginning. That's already a very full plate. And it was what was important to me about this Sherlock Holmes. I think some of the quirks of personality that people respond to or the quirks or the behavior that get people thinking in that direction, you know, as far as the possibility that he is autistic or at least on the spectrum. For me, that's just being, again, speaking just for myself, I think that's just being true to the character that Conan Doyle wrote. That's not something I own. I love writing it. I couldn't love the character more. But it wasn't something that I was pitching, or it wasn't a part of the character design. Now, all of that said, people have asked me before. It has come up. And I appreciate that. If anyone is watching the show and seeing, you know, even a little bit of themselves in Sherlock, and it's making them feel better or giving them hope, I love that. That makes me and the writers and Johnny, I'm sure, feel really great. But I also wouldn't want to mislead anyone and say it's all very deliberate and that was my plan. And you know, the truth is, I think that's it's much more Conan Doyle than us. But again, it makes me happy that it's helpful to anyone, or the idea that it could be helpful to anyone who's watching is a great thing.
This is great. So I want to just go through a litany of characters that we have seen or hope to see more. So Moriarty, yes or no, will we see him again? Will we see her again?
I would love to have Natalie back as soon as possible.
She's so popular, though. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the tricky bit. Natalie's dance card is never not full. She and I talked towards the end of this season. Gosh, when was it? It was just a few months ago. We talked on the phone. I'm sorry, we didn't talk on the phone. We traded emails back and forth. So we are trying to figure something out. Ultimately for us, we love Natalie so much. We will happily look for ways to work around her schedule and get her back. She has, you know, she's been so complimentary of the show and her experience, and I know Johnny and Lucy love working with her. So, by hook or by crook, I would like to think that we will see Moriarty this year. I can't promise it, but we're certainly trying to make that happen.
Awesome, Mycroft.
Mycroft. There are no firm plans right now, and yet looking ahead to season four. There will be reasons to see him again. I can think of a few right off the top of my head. There would be some pretty compelling reasons to bring Mycroft back. I mean, personally, that the most compelling reason is I just couldn't love Reese Fons more. Such a lovely person and such a great actor. We'll be working on that too.
We think that Reese is a genius, so we would obviously
Yes, we do.
Mrs. Hudson, obviously there's, and just for people maybe who aren't super familiar with the show or who are just getting into the show, Mrs. Hudson is a transgender character on Elementary. So a lot of people, especially with so much conversation nationally right now around transgender acceptance and positivity, are any hopes of seeing Mrs. Hudson some more, or even having an entire episode with Mrs. Hudson?
Gosh, yes. She's a character that we love her dearly. She's not quite on the Moriarty scale, if that makes any sense. Like, in other words, we wouldn't have to plan very far ahead to have Miss Hudson back. And when we have her around, it's possible we could do a whole story with her. More often than not, like, when we have her around, what we like about the idea of Miss Hudson is that her being transgender just isn't supposed to matter. You know, we never really speak to it. We never really make a point of it. And that is the point. So yes, she's, I believe she's a little more available to us. So I wouldn't be surprised if she pops up in the fourth season.
Okay. And, one more sort of question from Twitter people. A lot of people are asking what we can expect, in terms of Sherlock and Joan, next year in season four, if they'll continue to live in the brownstone together, or if you have plans for them to move out or go to London or anything like that. People love to know about Sherlock Holmes' living situation for some reason.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, no, gosh, we built such lovely sets. I'd hate to see them go. But yeah, at the moment, again, I'm trying to tiptoe around the few things I know for sure about season four. I don't see them leaving the brownstone anytime soon. And as far as London goes, I would love to get back to London. It's tricky. It takes a lot of planning. I'd like to think we can do it again one of these days, but it's not on the immediate horizon.
All right. Well, I don't want to take any more of your time. I want to thank you so much for being on the Baker Street Babes today. Tell us, just give people a quick where they can watch Elementary, when they can watch it, and what's coming up.
Oh, absolutely. Here in the States, it's Thursday nights at 10 p.m. on CBS. And I'm sorry to say I don't know where in the UK we're on one of the Sky networks.
You're on Sky One in the UK.
Sky One, thank you. And beyond that, I'm not sure where else, but I'm sure we are findable. I'm sure the internet can tell everyone where to find it. But I appreciate very specifically that you've watched and enjoyed and talked about Elementary.
Personally, I cannot thank you enough for the work that you have done to just bring amazing female characters to screen on a major network. It's a big deal.
thank you.
It means a lot to all of us, and it means a lot to me specifically. So thank you so much.
It tickles me that I was explaining to somebody the other day, having worked on so many shows after Star Trek, so many little shows that just nobody paid attention to, and you'd sort of have to explain where you're working and what it's about. It blows my mind that anybody is watching a show that I had anything to do with. So that means a lot, and I really appreciate it. And I'm glad you're digging it. I hope you keep watching.
If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2-2-1?